Well, it's harvest time on the Miller family farm in Fuddlestown in Wexford. And amid the bustle, Hannah Miller is juggling more than just farm work. A trained French horn player, she is in the thick of preparations for Fuddlefest, which is an on-farm musical festival taking place on the last weekend of August. And on top of that, she's also rehearsing for a major performance at the National Concert Hall in on August the 26th, where she'll join the RTE Concert Orchestra for Anne Dudley's Horn Concerto in a lunchtime concert. Well, when Dermot McIntyre visited her farm, he found her practicing with a very attentive audience of goats and poultry looking on. You definitely recognise it when you hear the horn, because it's always the hero in every film. A lot of times in different symphonies, there'll be like this fanfare or call in some way that would hark back to the history of the instrument. Historically, the horn would have been a shepherding instrument. The design of it comes from alpine horns, which you'd blow into the mouthpiece here and it would all be curled out in a straight line, I think 3 meters long, and they would have used those on mountains to call from one mountain to the other. The different calls would represent whether there was like an attack by a wolf or whether there was a storm rolling in or just a check-in, like all is good.
So the horn could be heard a lot further than the human voice.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, because it's just all about projection. Like during lockdown, I was actually doing quite a lot of playing outside, because just I'd say my family were sick of me playing inside. And I heard from neighbours who live more than a kilometre away that they could hear me playing. There's a really beautiful horn call in Brahms's first symphony, which Brahms had heard in the Alps, played in the distance. It's like just a really gorgeous melody, so it's like one that would always come to mind when I'm with the goats.
That is beautiful, and it was amazing the moment you started playing. They ran towards you, didn't they?
That's Puck and Nelly, just kind of having a bit of a tussle there. They're all gathered around now, waiting for the next instruction. They do seem to enjoy it. I got the goats for our own farm in 2020 because we had a really overgrown forest and we wanted it cleared a little bit. There was ivy growing up all of the trees and we just got two goats to manage the property a little bit. I just completely fell in love with them, so we've grown the herd to four now. I have been bringing them around to different locations. They were in Johnstown Castle for about 2 months recently, clearing a walled garden, and I just brought them down to my aunt's house now, so they're going to clear the ditches and stuff of her field.
It's beautifully kept behind us. We've got a duck pond, the lawn is all mowed, but in front of us, the hedgerow, like so many hedgerows at this time of year, thistles, nettles.
Yeah, getting really overgrown.
Yeah.
For sure. The goats are here just to tackle that a little bit, to make it a bit more manageable.
You can actually see the rear end of a goat. It's right in the thicket.
Yeah, those stumps there were completely covered in ivy and they just cleared them in 10 minutes. They're really hard workers. Goats are more interested in like things that are high up and hard to reach. They'll always get up on their back legs trying to reach up at the highest leaves. There's less likely to be parasites and stuff up high. They're huge at the moment. There's so much kind of protein in everything that they're eating that they are really looking healthy. I'd supplement their feeding with grain just for management of them, so that they stay friendly and onside and that they know I'm their friend.
The ears of barley full, beautifully golden, nearly ready for harvesting.
The combine will be coming in any day now, if it stays dry.
We've got the goats grazing behind us and we're stepping through now the barley field that's between your aunt's house and the farmhouse where you grew up.
Yeah, as a child, it was a shell of a building and my parents kind of slowly did it up around them as they went. So it's really flourishing now because Mam has gotten so into gardening that the garden reaches out to the edge of every field. Like, Dad has to stop her from gardening the fields almost. That
there's trees, there's lovely plants, then there's lampshades hanging in a big long string from tree to tree, like you would see in your great grandmother's sitting room with their little tassels, and just below them a gigantic willow sculpture.
She's called the Willow Warrior Woman, and she's adorned by all the lampshades that were put up in the first place just for lighting, because we have a stage down here. My mum was going to all the charity shops buying old lampshades. There's lampshades going all the way down the laneway now.
So when people think festival, they're thinking a gigantic stage and speakers on both sides and massive screens. But you're running a festival right here in your farmhouse.
Yeah, Fuddlefest, it's a real small festival right in the middle of an operational farm. Like, our family are all just like living in that house right there. Performers that tend to kind of stick around for the whole weekend, and there's only ever one event happening at any time. So the whole audience goes travelling through the garden and then creates this atmosphere where everyone's giving their attention to everything.
It's where your musical community plus your local community here get to overlap for a little while.
Yeah, and I think that makes it really special as well. To immerse people in the festival is really kind of part of the ethos of it. Like, this year we have the full orchestra of Wexford Symphonia doing the opening concert in the barn. Folk artists like Zoe Conway and John McIntyre doing a set. Cass Ensemble are doing like an experimental conceptual piece. Then we also do the total other end of the spectrum. We have like electronic dance music at night time. One of the nicest things about the festival is afterwards hearing from all the different people who were there. Everyone has a different opinion on what the best thing was.
Not every Irish festival has a silage pit as a venue.
No, that's why we changed the name of it to the Concert Pit, like, for the sake of the festival and the poor audience, so that it seems a bit fancier.
But the acoustics, I'd say, are amazing.
Yeah, it has a really high vaulted tin roof and concrete walls. It's a real long, kind of narrow building, so it actually like emulates a church, and it sounds absolutely brilliant, like you can hear a pin drop. The farm is so closely linked to the festival, and the farming has to come first as well. Like, if it's raining in the lead up to the festival, then it might not be suitable for cutting crops. So it can be really stressful if, like, the corn isn't ready to cut yet, which I hear from Dad every festival, like 3 days before, that it's not ready to go and that we won't have a campsite.
It is a pressure. Was there a moment that made you go, this is why I do what I do?
Yeah, in one of the first years of the Sunday morning, we had this absolutely brilliant singer-songwriter called Ali Comerford at like the wake-up concert. She was here on the stage, and the campsite was just beyond the trees there, and everyone could like hear the really gentle soothing music from their tents, and kind of were like drawn in from afar, stumbling out of their tents and coming to listen to the most like gentle, beautiful music. It was like the perfect start to the day, the real moment of calm for me, like when the goats are like happily grazing and you're sitting there with them and all is well.
Hannah Miller in conversation with Dermot McIntyre of Grey Heron Media. And for more on that, go to fuddlefest.ie.